Good morning, aloha, kakayaka, ohayo gozaimasu, and buenos dias, amigos. Welcome to Pets, People, and Paradise. I'm your host today, Ihor Basco, veterinarian, and our guy at the board, who's the guy who makes things happen here, our general manager, Dean Rogers. Thank you for being here, Dean.
Aloha, Dr. B.
Yeah, we try to make this station the place for your information, and hopefully it'll be something that you can be uplifted with and take home and utilize in your daily life. Well, we have a great show for you today. We have, from last week, hot weather problems and preventions. The recipe of last week we didn't do, have time for cooling spray or rinse to quell inflammation, heal sun and heat damaged skin, cool down overheating and such. But discussion of the day and our special guest, Dr. Robert Silver, the discussion of the day will revolve around all the misinformation about pot for pets. Is this the new panacea cure for all that ails your pets? Well, Dr. Rob has been doing lots of research on it, and is getting a grant to do research on it. Perhaps cannabis, hemp, is one of the other botanicals that we use. We'll get more into Dr. Rob Silver, who is actually the president of the Veterinary Botanical Medical Association now. There is a Veterinary Medical Association that actually goes into studying plants scientifically and looking at all the history of the plant as a medicine and figuring out how to utilize it in practice, because many of the plants have no side effects. Why not do something without side effects? Also, they're cheaper than drugs. Well, hot weather, it's been afflicting many of us humans, but what about the pets? Overheating plus the high humidity is a prescription for heat stroke. Yeah, and especially those dogs with the little noses, the snouts that are pushed in, the pugs especially, and dogs that are overweight, geriatric dogs, dogs with kidney problems, dogs with heart problems, dogs and cats with heart problems, geriatric and overweight and obese pets in the heat do not do well. In fact, it could be fatal. Always have a thermometer just in case so you can take your dog, cat's temperature. Learn how to do that. You can get one of those simple electronic $12 at the most thermometers. That's electronic. You put some Vaseline on there and put it in your dog or cat's butt for about a minute or until the thing beeps and you get a temperature reading. So 104. Your dog's panting and tongue is like bright red or dark red, or a cat is panting with its mouth open, it might be time for an ice cold bath. Yeah, as drastic as that is, it's one of the things that'll help. Now, of course, an ice cold enema would be even better, but not many people are equipped for that. No, I know we laugh about that, but I tell you, when we had an outbreak of heat stroke and in Michigan, and we were doing ice enemas on a lot of old dogs to save their life, you know, 104 and higher, up to 106 degrees, not good. Can cause brain damage. So whenever in doubt, get the water ice bucket out and maybe soak your animal in there for 10 minutes. So 104 or higher. Hopefully it's not higher. 104 is bad enough. Do not exercise your pet after 9 a.m. or before 4:30 p.m. So you got to do it when the weather is kind of cooling down in at least the lower 80s. Especially these old obese dogs, dogs with heart problems, cats with heart problems. Do not leave your dogs in the hot car. Now, duh. I mean, people are still doing it. They even leave their children in a hot car and forget about what they're doing. Do not leave your pets in a hot car. Leave them at home. bring cool water whenever on a hike. Put some ice cubes in your water bottle and some water in there, and so you can cool your dog down by giving it a drink and then pouring some on its head and neck and all over if you don't find a stream nearby. Make sure your dog is in good physical condition before going on long hikes in the heat. Do not feed your dog after strenuous exercise or after being just walking in this hot weather is enough to be strenuous. Wait until your dog cools down. So you don't also want to give them ice water to cool them down right away either. They're overheated. You might give them an ice cube to chew on. Basically, pour the water on ice water on them and then just give them room temperature water. Actually, the best thing for dehydration, I've looked this up many times, coconut water, either from the coconut or from your carton. Coconut water has your minerals that you would lose from sweating, from panting, and it would, besides water, replenish your minerals so you don't get stroke, heat stroke. And the other reason not to give ice water to especially large-chested dogs is to prevent bloat. They drink a bunch of water, roll around, twist their stomach, and you got a major problem. So what else is happening with hot weather? Well, guess what? Pathogenic bacteria and yeast. People are saying, my dog stinks. After like 3 days, my dog stinks. Well, that's the bacteria, the yeast, that just loves this climate. So maybe washing more often might be the answer. Also, dogs are getting more ear infections. So there's more bacteria in the ocean. There's more bacteria in the water, in the streams, because it's been raining off and on. So it's flushing all those nasty things into our streams. And with the excess wax, I don't know if you've noticed this, Dean, but in the hot weather, it seems like not only do dogs get excess wax, but people get excess wax in their ears.
I actually hadn't noticed that.
No. Well, some people are having problems with their ears getting plugged up with wax these days because of what happens. Wax plus bacteria plus yeast equals a big mess in your ears and in your dog's ears. So wipe those ears out with those baby wipes that are unscented and hypoallergenic, or cotton ball and some witch hazel. Guess what? Increased levels of fleas. There's fleas everywhere. All of a sudden, people are freaking out about fleas. Well, they've been here, and they love the weather, too. Maybe they're just having too much loving going on because they're just reproducing like mad. And so the recipe from the last week that I didn't give you and going to give you now is the cooling spray or rinse to quell your pet's inflammation. That has no side effects. They can lick it. It's fine. So what do? Get your pencil and paper out. You need some aloe juice. You need to buy some aloe juice. So you need 8 ounces of aloe juice, not gel, aloe juice. Then you need to make some green tea and some chamomile or peppermint tea. So if you have fleas also, I would do the peppermint tea. If you just have a dog with rashes and just getting hot, I would do the chamomile tea. So what I did last night is I just took, and I made a fresh batch, I took 2 tea bags of green tea and 2 tea bags of chamomile tea, and I put them in a half cup of hot water and let them sit for half a day. You don't have to do it that long, but just enough till the color turns tea-like. And you need witch hazel. You need 2 ounces or a quarter cup of witch hazel. You can get the witch hazel with 30% alcohol, which is fine. Or you can get the witch hazel from your health food store by Thayer, T-H-A-Y-E-R, without alcohol. Now, if your dog has a lot of rashes, you want to eliminate the alcohol. Okay, so to repeat again, for your spray or for your rinse, the same thing. Keep it in a spray bottle or whatever. 8 ounces of aloe juice. 4 ounces, so a half cup of your green tea and your chamomile. 2 ounces of witch hazel. And keep it in the refrigerator, not the freezer, refrigerator. And then you can just put that on your dog, whether to spray. Some dogs don't like to be sprayed, like my dog, so I sponge it on. And although it doesn't have anything too irritating, except maybe the peppermint, if you add peppermint there, do not spray around the eyes. Just sponge around the eyes. And then you can blow a fan on them afterwards while they're wet. So that's your cool weather rinse. We have Dr. Silver on. Let me just give a little information about Dr. Silver. Well, Dr. Silver, Rob Silver, has been a friend and fellow colleague, lecturer, author, researcher. We got to know each other very well, lecturing together at various conferences for the last 25 years. And during 9/11, I was stuck in Colorado for 2 weeks and spent a week with him in his home, which he was kindly enough to invite me to stay. Good guitar player, father, husband, just a great guy in general, but one of the smartest vets I know, and I've learned a lot from him in the past, just being in his lectures and talking to him and having a good relationship with him. So he is currently the president of the Veterinary Botanical Medical Association, an organization that has brought back herbal medicine into the healing modalities which veterinarians can choose from, supporting research, education of botanical medicine to help heal and treat your pets. He has a book soon to be published on e-books and in print called Medical Marijuana and Your Pet. He's the chief medical officer for RX Vitamins, a supplement company that I use many of, and 1982 graduate of Colorado State University Vet School, founder of Boulder's Natural Animals, one of the first integrative practices in the country. And his website for low-potency hemp-based pet products can be found at wellpetdispensary.com. So welcome to the show, Dr. Silver.
Thank you, Dr. Basco. Great to be here. Wish I was actually there, but it's not too bad here in Boulder, Colorado.
Isn't it cooler there than it is here?
I don't know. What's your temperature?
It's humid, about 82%, and it's getting up to 85 right now.
It's dry here in 84, not a cloud in the sky.
Oh,
lovely.
Gosh, Rocky Mountain high.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of high, people confuse cannabis and hemp, and we've had so many people ask us about, can we give our pot to our cancer pet that's going to die anyhow? And I don't really know how to answer that question because I don't have any experience giving pot or hemp or CBD or any of those things to pets. So maybe we should have some definitions on what we're talking about and what you're doing research on.
Yeah, it sounds like a good idea. Well, let's... The plant itself, we call it Cannabis sativa L. That's the formal botanical name for it. And under that heading, it takes two different branches. One branch is the branch called marijuana, popularly called marijuana, that is high in THC, gets you high, doesn't have a lot of fiber in it, and is generally lower in the CBDs and the other cannabinoids, although a lot of plant growers and plant breeders are trying to breed the plants to breed up the CBDs to match the THC in it because the CBDs have an awful lot of value medicinally. The other branch, other than marijuana, of the cannabis tree, so to speak, is called hemp. And hemp has very, very low THC, so low it won't get you high at all, but very high CBD and other medicinally active cannabinoids and terpenes. So that's the definition of the two. And one of the things that we have found over the years and is substantiated by research back in the 70s is that of all of the animals that fly and crawl and slither on this planet, for some darn reason, it seems as though dogs have the highest sensitivity to THC. And they've done studies where they found that they have THC receptors. We all have THC receptors in our brain. Dogs have the highest density of these, and most especially in the part of their brain that governs coordination. So people who are eager to give their pets some marijuana because they're sick, you know, they want to help them. We're not talking about getting your pets high. I want to make that very clear from the very beginning. And this whole phrase, pot for pets, really kind of disturbs me because pot kind of harkens back to, you know, the get high marijuana, not so much the medicinal marijuana. But, you know, people are finding that the first time they give their dog some marijuana that has THC in it, the animal is sick and suffering, that it may have an adverse reaction. It may get very, very unstable, get what we call ataxic. It kind of wobbles and can't move forward. You know, it might drool or urinate or even poo on itself. It might even fall over on the side. So one of the reasons I thought it was important for me to speak out and try to educate the public and educate veterinarians is to try to reduce the potential for these adverse reactions to happen.
Right.
In Colorado, where we have legal medicinal marijuana and we have legal recreational marijuana, we've seen a huge uptick in admissions to the animal ER for overdoses of THC. And it's a serious problem. Small amounts of it are good medicinally. Large amounts of it are toxic, and they actually recorded 2 deaths in dogs in Colorado. And we've always thought that marijuana was so safe, you know, you're going to pass out before it kills you, you know. So if you're using it yourself. So I think this is important. I think it's important to educate people, and I thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak out and speak to some people.
Now, those deaths, weren't those deaths associated with marijuana brownies, or was that pure?
Well, they were. Chocolate is much more toxic to dogs than THC, but we wind up getting what's called a co-toxicity. And as you know, and maybe your listeners also know, there's a lot of people that are pretty negative about marijuana. You know, it's been stigmatized in our culture for 70 years, you know, inappropriately. And so sometimes you can create research or create results from research that help to, you know, support your own opinion about things.
Exactly.
And so by talking about the 2 deaths in this paper that was published of dogs secondary to, you know, marijuana ingestion, there was no mention, you know, of the chocolate that was in high amounts in these brownies. In one case, there was one dog, it was a little skipper key that probably weighed all of 15 pounds, ate an 8x8 tray
Wow.
of brownies. You know, chocolate brownies, you know, with, I'm sure it had a ton of pot in it, but it also had a ton of chocolate. So, marijuana can affect the heart, it can lower the blood pressure, it can slow down the heart, and chocolate also affects the heart. And so when you get this kind of, yin yang pulling on the heart of these 2 toxins, you can run into some problems.
Yeah, now one of the things in the veterinary botanical medicine group we've been discovering is just like with drugs, you never know what happens physiologically and biochemically when you mix about 4 or 5 different herbs with different effects on the body, really, because each herb, like garlic, has 200 compounds. I mean, we only study maybe 5 up to 10 compounds in one herb, and with drugs, it's even worse when you're giving flea medication, you're giving pain medication, and other medications for skin allergies. We kind of don't know what really happens in there. And with, like chocolate and marijuana, probably that could be not a good combination for pets.
I would say most definitely. You know, chocolate's also an herbal extract. And they found chocolate to have, you know, for humans, you know, and animals that aren't sensitive to it, a lot of very beneficial properties, antioxidant and things like that, but not for our pets. It's a problem for our pets.
Now, why would someone want to even think about using hemp, CBD, when there's so many other herbs around? What can it treat that other things can't?
Well, there are many herbs that can substitute for some of the effects of marijuana. But back in the 1990s, researchers discovered that the body has a whole other system that helps to regulate and protect it. And it works with the nervous system and the immune system. And this was called the endocannabinoid system, or the ECS. And they'd never found this before. And what they found was that the body has its own cannabinoids. It has like its own pot that it generates, its own THC and CBD that it generates itself internally by its nerves. And that this endocannabinoid system, this ECS system, has a different set of actions than other systems, like our the pain relieving system that we know we use narcotics for, and things like that. And I read a really cool paper in which they kind of summarized the effects of the endocannabinoid system, which that it benefits the body by making us relax, making us eat, making us sleep, helping us forget, and helping to protect our nervous system. And so because of the intimate relationship between the cannabinoids that are created by the plant, very unique to our ECS, there is actually not necessarily always a substitute with other plants.
I see.
For cannabis. But, you know, I mean, I've been using herbs for years and acupuncture to treat epilepsy, you know, and not always that great, but it is helpful to have one more tool, you know, such as CBDs, cannabidiols, makes me excited, you know. And unfortunately, you know, there still are legal hurdles that we're going to have to cross in order for us to feel comfortable with the use of these substances.
Well,
for instance, speak more. The medicinal marijuana laws that each state, the 23 states that have passed, are for humans. They're for human physicians and they're human patients. For a veterinarian to prescribe marijuana, which has THC, which is a Schedule I, would be illegal. And the veterinarian could lose his license, he could go to jail. And even for a pet owner to give THC to their pet, in some communities, it could be considered to be animal abuse. And the pet owner themselves could be brought up on charges. I know here in Colorado, when children accidentally get these little tasty little edibles that their owners might leave on a countertop and they eat them and have to go to the ER, that the parents of these children that left out these edibles, even accidentally, are charged with, you know, with animal abuse child abuse or child neglect or things like that.
Wow.
So although I think that, you know, there are a lot of potential benefits to the THC and the CBDs as found in marijuana, my preference is to look at industrial hemp, which has very, very low legal levels of THC so that it won't get a veterinarian into trouble, and has very high levels of the CBDs and the other cannabinoids and terpenes, which are theoretically not illegal, although the DEA wants to have control over everything, and they've said that even CBDs or anything from the marijuana plant is considered to be illegal. So there's still a gray zone. And there's a gray zone state to state. I mean, in Colorado, we're having trouble banking. I mean, there's millions and millions and millions of dollars being made on medical marijuana and recreational marijuana here in the state, and they can't put it into banks. They've got to have armored cars with cash and guns, you know, to transport it. And they've got to pay their employees with cash, and how do they pay their taxes? So there's a lot of things we still need to work out. One quick path to make these things easier would be for the U.S. Congress to pass a law that would make THC not a Schedule I, which is illegal, but like a Schedule II, like morphine, you know, or a Schedule III or a Schedule IV, like Valium. But when that's going to happen is unknown, and with a changeover in administration in the next couple of years, I think that we're going to have to wait until, you know, we're going to have to wait a couple more, 3 or 4 years for that to happen.
Yeah. Now, you know, so basically if I tell someone to go to online and buy some CBD, not THC, for their pet and try it, that wouldn't be cool with the FDA.
Well, I think it's a gray zone, and I think because it's not THC, and I think because you're not talking about a pharmaceutical-grade CBD, but in fact what you're talking about is a whole plant extract that is that one of the main components in it is CBD. I think that there's wiggle room there. But, you know, it depends on your level of risk-taking in terms of where you're what you're comfortable with. Because there are companies that are selling these hemp-based pet supplements, you know, over the Internet, through the mail, state to state, my sense is that at this point in time, the FDA or the DEA just don't consider it to be a big enough problem to do anything about.
I see.
They may at some point in time, but they've got bigger, you know, bigger axes to grind, bigger problems to deal with than, you know, pets taking, you know, hemp.
Now, the benefits here. You've listed, like, 25 benefits just about, like thunder phobia. I used it on my dog's CBD, thunder phobia, really worked for her. But other animals, it seemed like it calmed them down, then it made them excitable later on. So it seems like it doesn't work the same way with every pet. Have you found that?
Yes, this is true. However, there also is a lot of difference between different companies, you know, materials, what the raw materials are that they're using. Could there be contamination in there?
Right.
Are they, you know, what are they using for the extraction? Are they using solvents like butane or alcohol versus CO2 extraction, which is the best way at this point in time to do it? Are they dosing properly? You know, are they dosing with a high enough dosage? Are they dosing with a low enough dosage? And so there's so much still, just because it's been 70 years of prohibition, and we're just now kind of, you know, getting, figuring things out and getting exposure to these things. It's hard to say. I mean, there was a vet friend of mine in New York State who I'd sent some CBDs to for a patient of hers who was seizuring a lot. And the reaction of that patient was something I'd never heard of before. And yet she, you know, it seemed like that was, you know, a real reaction. You know, the dog became sexually very active, even though it was had been neutered. And that, I haven't heard that before. So I think there's still much we need to learn about. And I think the way that we can do that is opening the dialogue, talking to each other. You know, the veterinarians need to, first of all, educate themselves about what cannabinoids and ECS is all about, and talk with each other about what they're doing personally or what their clients are telling them they're doing. You know, we need to look at the products they're using, you know, and do it not just based on the CBDs, but also based on the products. And some of these companies aren't telling us how much is in it, you know, so it makes it a lot more difficult to figure out what a dosage is.
Yeah, so most veterinarians are going to be reluctant to even try it. But look at all these things you listed, besides epilepsy, neuroprotection, neurodegenerative diseases, cerebral ischemia, that's like stroke, myocardial ischemia, heart attack, inflammation, psoriasis, skin problems, intestinal inflammation, arthritic inflammation, pain, immunosuppression, vomiting, chemotherapy-induced vomiting, motion sickness, diabetes, one, bone formation and fracture healing. They just had this on TV.
Yeah.
Cancer.
There's a study just published on that.
Antimicrobial. I mean, this thing is like the, ginseng of modern times almost.
Well, it is. I mean, and the reason is that it has such wide-ranging effects is because the endocannabinoid system in the body has such wide-ranging effects. And a lot of the really good research going on right now is not about, you know, the plants, but about what is actually going on inside the body. You know, we need to learn more. We need to understand more about this ECS and how it works. And then that will, you know, lead us to understand better what we can expect, you know, from these plant cannabinoids.
Yeah, you know, like, why do dogs and humans have receptors? Do monkeys and apes have THC receptors? I mean, that just kind of blows my mind.
Oh, yeah. These receptors are so old in terms of the evolution of animals on this planet that it goes back 500,000 years. These are some of the first receptors that were used because what do? They help to protect the nervous system. They help improve appetite, food ingestion. They help relax. I mean, you know, the fight or flight mechanism, you know, it's the epinephrine. You know, you got that saber-toothed tiger coming after you. You need that fight or flight. But if that's all you're ever going to do is fight or flight, you're going to have adrenal exhaustion, and that's not good for survival either. So, you know, forgetting, this is one of the aspects of the ECS that they're talking about valuable for post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Wow.
Although here in Colorado, the health board just rejected that for the third time as a reason to prescribe medical marijuana, which I think is a big mistake. But they're claiming there's not enough research, and maybe they're just being a little tight sphinctered about that.
Well, I think the tight sphincter comes into effect for sure because it's not politically correct, the bottom line, I think.
Well, in Colorado, though, things are a little different here. It's kind of it's a different atmosphere. Because of the legality of it, it's really been pleasant to live in a state where you're not always feeling like you have to look over your shoulder. You know, you can grow some in your backyard, and quite frankly, that's what I promote. You know, I say, to heck with all these expensive extracts and dispensaries. You know, in Colorado, we have the right to grow a few plants of our own, either out in our backyard or, you know, in the basement. And this is the best way to, the most economical way, you know, to create this stuff. And then you can make extracts using using coconut oil or butter or olive oil, or you can even just put it in capsules, you know. The big problem is that that stuff you're growing in your yard has THC in it, so you have to take it really slow and gradually when you're introducing it to the dog.
Well, why don't you just grow CBD hemp in your backyard instead of
pot? You can.
So
now in Colorado, at least, we now are able to buy hemp seeds, and they're doing a lot of growing of hemp in order to, you know, or breeding of hemp, rather, to promote the higher CBD aspect of it. I spoke with a hemp company in Colorado last week. I'm going to go visit them next week. That they're not even using seeds anymore. They're using cuttings because they've spent 10 years breeding these hemp plants to create three times the amount of CBDs that are found in Charlotte's Web.
Wow.
And there's so much variation from seed to seed that it's much easier to take cuttings off of the plant where you can just absolutely reproduce the genetics from one generation to another, which guarantees you very, very similar amounts of CBD and other cannabinoids, you know, per grow.
Wow.
It's fascinating. I thought I was kind of, you know, in my 60s, I thought I was, you know, nearing the end of my career, and now I'm totally rejuvenated.
Good.
And can't put this stuff down.
Yeah, I can't imagine you playing golf every day and being bored and with your nuts.
I play my guitar every day, and I wouldn't be bored.
Yeah, I got it. Hey, people, you can call in with your questions, 826-7771, and on the neighbor islands and even in the mainland over there, toll free. 866-275-1112. Don't be shy.
Great.
Well,
yeah.
Thank you for the research you're doing and actually taking up the banner for plant medicine, because this is not about pot. You know, it's not about, it's about medicine and using plants and learning about how our bodies have been genetically modified by God through evolution over time to even have receptors, you know, for various things like this.
It is. It's an amazing partnership between plants and people, isn't it?
And the reason we like botanical medicine, it gets us closer to nature. And I tell you, the closer you get to nature, for me personally, the more I see God's work, you know, in nature, and it just blows my mind. We have a caller.
Okay, great.
Hi.
Hi.
Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Okay. Miss Donna, and I called in before with my dog being nervous, a little terrier. And you have recommended CBD, and I, you know, the marijuana. CBD, I'm sorry. And I'm wondering, I've been listening to the talk, which has been very interesting. Should I still buy it and try it on her?
So the caller is asking that she's used CBD and it's not really working.
I'm saying I have not. You have suggested it for my terrier. I've been using L-theanine with, I don't know how much results or not. And am I to continue just to use the L-theanine like twice a day, 100 milligrams?
I only recommend it as needed, and usually it's for a few days, but not every day.
All right.
Dr. Rob, would you recommend for a nervous terrier type dog CBD?
Well, the reports are that it does seem to help with anxiety. And so I think that it's certainly worth a try. It won't hurt, although, as you've mentioned, sometimes we will see unusual reactions to it. So, I would start slowly. Using one of the lower potency commercially available products that are available on the internet or maybe locally, I think is a good place to begin. One of the things that we're finding is that there is it seems as though there's like what I would call a biphasic response to dosing. And it seems as though the lower doses actually can do a lot more than the higher doses, which may have more of a sedative or a side effect thing or may be more useful for serious diseases. So I definitely think it's worthwhile. And I think I couldn't hear her question very well, but was she also talking about using L-theanine to help with calming?
Yeah.
You could also look at tryptophan as well. Both theanine and tryptophan together work very nicely to help with anxiety and calming. You talked about peppermint just a little earlier in your show, Ihor, and I found that taking essential oil of peppermint for an anxious dog and putting it in your palm and then rubbing it into the front pads, just gently rubbing it into the front pads of the dog, allows the heat of the pads to vaporize the peppermint oil. And peppermint oil, even more so than lavender, seems to be very calming to dogs.
Yeah.
So I've used that as a partner when I'm giving them theanine and tryptophan and other types of calming herbs to help them with their anxiety or with thunderphobia or vet visits or groomer visits, those kinds of things.
Wow, that's great. Thank you.
Good. Okay. So I was going to order that the CBD from that company you suggested, Canna?
Canapet.
Mm-hmm. Canapet, yeah. So...
Yeah, that's one company. I sell their stuff on my website too, and I've heard a lot of anecdotal reports from customers that they've had good success, but not all have good success. And the company recommends that if the dosage that you start at, which they have the capsules based on the size of the animal, that if the dosage that you start with is not adequate, either give it more frequently or go to the next size up. And it might be that a higher dosage would work. Unfortunately, we're still waiting to get more precise information from studies. And so right now we're just trying to gather as much of this, experiential information from clients. So you might want to call back and let us know what your experiences are.
Okay. And she'll get, just give it when she's really anxious. I mean, sometimes she'll dart back and forth and look all around almost like she's...
Well, it's going to take an hour to take effect. I think you're better off trying it as a daily dosage and seeing what that does in terms of lowering their anxiety threshold, raising their anxiety threshold or lowering their, their nervous system, excitability in general. And that's one thing that we know about cannabinoids, which is that they can have an inhibitory effect on, a highly functioning nervous system. Although CBDs don't work directly in that way, they work in slightly different mechanisms.
Well, let's just talk about terriers since that's a common problem with terriers. So it seems like they're always, their adrenal glands always producing stress hormones. And so that's not really good. In general, if we were always stressing out, I mean, that would eventually take a toll on their heart and nervous system and maybe make things even worse.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying that CBD, and from all this research, that it actually relaxes the brain and relaxes muscles and reduces some of the blood flow to the brain so it's kind of more calm.
I don't think it reduces blood flow. I think it actually interferes. It actually affects the nervous signals.
Uh-huh. Wow. Maybe a lot of people should be taking CBD.
Yes.
Well, I don't disagree with you there.
Okay, because in that one, when I looked up online, it said take it twice a day, and was I think it was I don't know if we said 100%.
Theoretically, CBDs could be effective just once a day.
Good.
But yes. A strategy, if you need to increase the dosage, if once a day isn't doing it enough for you, instead of going to a higher potency capsule, would be to give the same potency capsule twice a day or three times a day.
Okay.
In studies, we've found that it has about an 8-hour duration of effect. From a study that was done in 1988. And there's a new study that's just getting started out of Auburn University that might redefine that. So we're going to see what those results tell us.
Yeah, okay. That sounds good. I gave it to my dog, Canapet, during the fireworks, and I gave it to her in the morning. And during our walk, she didn't, terrorize other people's dogs. She seemed very calm but not sedated.
Mm-hmm.
Then about 4 o'clock, it started to wear off, so I gave her another dose.
Mm-hmm.
And she was fine until the bombs came, you know, where they shake your house. And then she panted, but she did not shake. So normally they shake and pant. So she panted but did not shake. So I would say that just using one substance, it worked fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
And then combining with others, it may work even better.
Yeah.
Combining with acupuncture and massage, you know, flower essences, talking gently. But, you know, the thunder phobia and the fear of loud noises goes so deep that, you know, they're just frightened to the bone. And even when you have them on strong drugs, it doesn't seem like it's enough sometimes to overcome their fear.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can I switch to another thing, the fleas situation? I heard what you said about that cooling, and I wrote that down for the, you know, to cool the pets. Does that also help with fleas, or because you were talking about fleas that I missed whether that was...
Well, we can talk about that next week in full detail, but basically you have to deal with your environment. So like yesterday, you can ask my wife, I was washing cat towels. I wash every 3 days. I wash all the bedding of the cats, the dogs. I vacuum. I put down 20 mule team borax on areas, then vacuum it up. Hours later, I wash carpets. And I wash bed sheets that my dog's on. I wash my dog. I flea comb all my animals. And that's what it takes, a lot of work. And this summer right now, we have more hatchings going on. So you could use the flea program, Lufeniron, to decrease the amount of hatchings. Like you take that pill once a month for your cats, usually are the ones who bring it in the house. And through the summer, maybe 3 months in a row, that might prevent new fleas from hatching. But in general, it's basically cleaning your pets and the environment, and it's constant work. Every 3 days, we go through this.
Okay. And this is not my dog, and the owner had been using Advantage Multi for dogs, or Frontline for cat. No, that's a dog. How do you feel about those?
Well, I, in general, don't like using pesticides. Because for one, if it's a top spot, every time you pet your dog for the first 10 days, you're getting the chemicals in your system. Number two, it can cause liver damage, neurological damage, and things like that. So it's not appropriate for all animals. And if you have to give it, I recommend giving herbs to protect the liver, like prior and after, like milk thistle is probably one of them. How about you, Dr. Rob?
I agree with you. I think milk thistle is a great place to go.
And then actually, you've got an insurance plan, you know, just in case you crash your car. Just in case you crash your liver, why don't you take milk thistle prior to those chemicals? And then when I had to do this with my Dobie one time when we had a bunch of tick breaks, after the application and after removing all the ticks, I put a red bandana around his neck where I put that top spot on it to remind me and other people not to pet the dog over there for a while. Because they found Frontline in women's breast milk.
Ouch.
So that's not a good place for it.
Right. So Lufeniron pill, is that instead of this?
Well, it's a birth control pill for fleas.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I have to order that from...
A veterinarian, yeah.
Like you. Okay.
Or like anybody.
Okay.
Okay.
Fine. I would do that. All right.
Okay. Thank you for your call. Thank you for calling. So, Dr. Rob, are there any last comments, issues, points you want to bring across for the people And I'm hopefully some veterinarians are listening, because I did send this out to veterinarians, which I would think would be a good idea since people are.
Well, it'd be nice to have more questions. I can be reached if people would like to email me directly at the email that's on that website that you had quoted earlier, info@wellpetdispensary.com, if there's any specific questions that I can help people with. But I think we've done a good job of covering things. You know, the reality is we don't really know exactly what dosages to use or exactly what conditions it can work for, but we're learning. We're learning from people using it. And, for instance, I have heard from a number of sources that it can actually make cancer go away. If you're using a certain type of an extract and you're using, you know, a high enough dosage for a long enough period of time.
Wow.
But what has been interesting and consistent in what I'm hearing from a number of different sources is that when you discontinue the use of the extract, of the CBD THC extract, the cancer will come back.
Wow, that's scary. Hey, we have a caller, Dr. Rob.
Great.
Wow, cancer can come back.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You've talked about the importance of raw meat in dogs' diets, and I was wondering, does that include pork? Can you give raw pork to dogs, or do I cook it before I give it to them?
I don't usually do pork for many reasons, but no, I don't include pork in that. And it's not for every dog. Raw meat is not necessarily for every dog. Some dogs do better with cooked meats. Some digestive problems do better with raw meat, and some get worse with raw meat. So it really depends on the individual. So I don't like to make, like, although I do on his show, make generalizations about raw meat. But in general, if you have healthy, organic meat, why not?
And especially stay away from the pork if you've got a dog that is older with digestive issues.
Well, cooked pork works better than raw. Dr. Rob, what do you have to say?
Well, just I share your opinion regarding pork. I think it has a time and place, but not for all animals. And the raw pork issue is something that really concerned me, because we've always been worried about this intramuscular parasite, Trichinella, that pork has. But what I understand from some of my clients who do feed raw pork is that they now are using anti-worm medications, much like some of the ones you were just discussing that were flea repellents, to kill the intramuscular parasites, thereby potentially making raw pork safe to eat, at least as far as that aspect of it. So I think the source of the pork is very important, and whether they've, and certainly organic pork, would they be using a pesticide in organic pork? I don't know. Probably not by definition of organic. But that's what I know about pork. It can be very cooling, which is not bad, you know, for skin problems, for irritation and pruritus and inflammation.
Right. And could you tell me the name of the flea medicine that you like the best, again, that I can get from the vet? I missed that.
L-U-F-E-N, something like Lufeniron. L-U-F-E-N-U-R-O-N. Lufeniron sounds like someone's name from outer space.
With an F or an S?
Lufen.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Aloha.
Well, got some questions, multi-dimensional questions there. Yeah, we do have skin problems here in the heat of summer, and I'm sure they're a little different than yours, because you have dryness, we have damp heat, and some of the foods aggravate it, but I use pork a lot. It's either fish or pork for dogs that react to hot heat here, and they do much better on those two diets than, say, definitely commercial dry food, or raw local beef with the high omega-3 CLA content seems to work okay, too, raw.
Yeah, nice.
So, did you have a question?
Sure. I was wondering, is there an application for cats in this as well?
Yes. Yes. And the research was not done with the as they did with the dogs and THC. So We're not really hearing about cats developing this problem, but I think you still need to be very cautious in introducing THC to your cat, just like you should be with dogs.
We had one client that I'm actually I recommended to try it. I didn't know if it would work. He has a little cat, a little Persian, and the Persian hates the husband of the family and can't get near it, can't do anything to it, and it's, you know, very belligerent for a little sweet little cat. And so we said, well, it made my dog mellow, let's try your kitty at a really low dose. Well, it seemed like it calmed the kitty down, and then later on the cat was kind of confused and meowing and meowing and wandering around the house meowing.
Well, the only psychotropic part of the marijuana plant is the THC.
Yeah.
So the CBDs are known to be kind of calming and sedative. So I don't know. Maybe it was crying out for more because it felt so good. You know, I hate to say that. Maybe they should just stick with catnip, you know.
Oh, right. Okay, that was an interesting answer. Thank you for that. Well, let's wrap it up, Rob, and thank you again for your time, your work, your research. I'm glad you didn't retire and play golf all the time.
I'm a crappy golf player anyway.
Play your guitar, love your wife and your children, and hope to see you sometime soon.
I think we will. Thank you, Igor, for this opportunity to help educate more people about this stuff.
Aloha. Ahu
Iwa. Aloha.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was Dr. Rob Silver from Colorado, educator, researcher, veterinarian, had the first veterinary holistic integrative veterinary place actually in west of the Mississippi. And he's been around for a while, and he's really a really smart guy in that we both lecture a lot, and we noticed that about 10 years ago that we need to put more science into botanical medicine because it's so hoo-hoo and new age that people just shut down when they hear the word, the H word, herbs. So it was amazing through the last, I would say, 20 years of that we've been kind of like lecturing. We have to like produce scientific evidence that what we're saying during our lecture actually has some scientific backing. And we're surprised to find out, yes, other countries are doing lots of research in herbs. Russia, India, Pakistan, Iran, Europe, Germany, Italy, France. You know, it's happening everywhere except here in the U.S. And so, and veterinarians are more afraid of garlic than they are of frontline. They're more afraid of some herb like chamomile than they are afraid of giving Rimadyl. And that kind of represents the brainwashing that the pharmaceutical multinational, multi-billionaire corporations control the vet schools, control TV and all those ads about drugs. The war on drugs is happening right now. They're bombarding us with messages. You need this drug to stay up. You need this drug to relax. So in that atmosphere of the U.S., Veterinary Botanical Medical Association is trying to, like, get some sanity back and look at God created this stuff. It grows naturally. It can be gotten a lot less expensively, and it's good for you with a lot less side effects. So we're putting the science into botanical medicine so that you, the pet owners, can benefit, and we can all benefit from more knowledge.
Say, Dr. B, do you have the contact website at least for Dr. Silver?
Yeah, he wanted to go do info@wellpetdispensary.com. info@wellpetdispensary.com.
Thank you.
You have to know how to spell dispensary. Now, I might have a problem with that, so I'm going to spell it for you. DISPENSARY, dispensary. Aloha.
Have a great and safe weekend. Aloha.
Paw Foundation presents the third annual Music and Mango Festival Sunday, August 9th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Halulu Fish Pond, located a half mile past Tanalei Town. Live music, hands-on activities, food demos, local artisans and crafts, a water slide, and contests including Best Mango Dish and Biggest Mango. This fundraiser for the Waipaha Foundation is a special opportunity to enjoy a relaxing day in the Ahupua'a. WaipahaFoundation.org or 826-9969.
Go Farm Hawaii at Kauai Community College is a training program assisting those interested in agriculture and becoming viable production growers. An Ag Curious seminar will be held Tuesday, August 18th from 6 to 8 p.m. at KCC's OSET Building, Room 106 C and D. Hear from successful farmers about their growing experiences and learn more about the not-for-credit Go Farm training program. More information and RSVP at 245-8318.
Aloha, this is Dennis Kamakahi, and you are tuned into KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea.
Homelessness, drug abuse, crime, AIDS, domestic violence, families in crisis. When is somebody going to do something about it? Somebody already is. You are. And I am. Because by partnering with Kauai United Way, we each do our share to tackle the tough problems that diminish our quality of life. The more money Kauai United Way can raise to support critical programs confronting these issues, the more effective they'll be. It's really that simple. So, if you want to be part of the solution, here's your chance. Kauai United Way.
Hawaii Seed and GMO Free Kauai, celebrating over 10 years of educating ourselves and others. Mahalo Kauai for awakening. Mahalo KKCR. HawaiiSeed.org or 651-9603.
Your underwriting support strengthens our community and builds your business. Underwriting messages on KKCR reach more listeners than any other Kauai radio station. Call 826-7774 or visit kkcr.org. and click on Underwrite.
Grateful Dead and Friends. Every Saturday, 6 to 8, Grateful Freddy. Get your weekly dose of live Grateful Dead music. Spinning live boards. Rather Be With You, 6 to 8. What do you think, Bill?
Grateful Dead show with Grateful Freddy. The Grateful Dead DJ. At all times, all Grateful Dead fans.
Saturdays 6 to 8.